It's Garden for Life for August on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley with Jackson County Master Gardener Lynn Kunzman. Lynn, thanks for joining us once again.
Well, thanks for having me.
Let's talk about this time of year in August when it tends to get awful darn hot, and you might notice your plants, while they're looking pretty good, are slowing down in the heat. Are there points at which you need to take some steps to protect them?
Well, you certainly can put shade cloth over some if they look like they're getting damaged in some of those super hot days that we have now in the valley. So some people do. They put up hoop houses and they'll put shade cloth or they'll put Rime over to kind of give the plants a little break from the sun when it's 110 degrees. But I mean, most of our summer vegetables are used to high heat, but they will stop setting fruit if the heat gets too high, right? So, during August, you should be gathering in peppers and tomatoes and eggplant, and all those things should have, produced quite a bit of fruit already, and will continue to do so into October. But they might slow down a little bit in terms of setting fruit when those temperatures are really high.
You know, you mentioned bringing stuff in this month, which, obviously a lot of gardens are doing. But I noticed a wide range of plants, potatoes and tomatoes in particular with, when they come all at once or they come in stages.
Right.
Or, yeah, I mean, the time to harvest, if you look on the back of the seed packets, as you've instructed us to do, that there's a whole bunch of different times when things can be ready.
Right. So for instance, some of the tomatoes, our earlier tomatoes, have like a 75 or 80 day period where they're, they'll be ready in 80 days. Our heirloom tomatoes, some of them take 100 days, so they're not going to come until August, September, and then they'll start bearing fruit for you. The other thing about tomatoes is that determinate tomatoes, which kind of grow to a certain height and then set one big crop, they will make a large crop that comes ripe kind of all at once. So think about like paste tomatoes, San Marzanos, or Romas, and people who want to make sauces like to grow those because they can go out and gather, buckets of tomatoes at one time, take them in, can them up, and they've got their stuff for the shelves. And then those plants will generally, in our valley, in a warm climate like this, will set a bumper crop. They'll go again. And again, all those things will come ripe pretty much at the same time. Things like indeterminate tomatoes, like for those of you who grow sun gold cherry tomatoes, everybody knows that they start ripening their fruit down at the base, and then they just keep growing and growing and growing and growing till they've taken over the world and invaded, and they've fallen off of the structure you've put them in because they're so big. And they just keep setting and ripening fruit all through the season. That's what indeterminate means. And so that's nice for being able to harvest on a daily basis a few tomatoes, or lots if you have sun gold. they're a little monstrous in their ability to provide us with all the cherry tomatoes we would ever want. But that's how most of the heirloom tomatoes perform. They'll keep setting fruit up until frost, right? And so you'll have a ton of little green tomatoes on the thing, as well as the older ripe tomatoes that you are starting to ripen, and you can bring them in and put them on your shelves or, in a box in a room so that they can ripen after the frosts come.
Yeah, that was my experience last fall. There was a lot of green tomatoes out there when it started getting cold outside.
Right.
You mentioned the structures, the wire frames and the other things we have to do to support tomatoes. If we didn't do those things, would the tomatoes continue to grow just all over the ground, or what would happen?
Oh, yeah, they're a vine. And so, in nature, where they grow in nature, they just spread out along, like squash do, along the ground, right? But you certainly wouldn't want your tomatoes to do that here because, first of all, it takes up too much of your garden space. And secondly, the slugs and snails would just come and eat them right off the ground. All the little critters would be chugging down your tomatoes. So we cage them, and that way we get the tomatoes, or most of them. There are still little critters that will get up in there and peck your tomatoes, or, you know, chew on your tomatoes if they can. But yeah, so caging them just makes better use of your garden space.
Yeah. This is Garden for Life on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley with Master Gardener Lynn Kunzman. Let's move into more general gardening talk, because I know we've talked in the past and haven't lately about just the general approach advocated by you folks at Master Gardeners and Oregon State University Extension, everybody else. This is a, very much a no-till kind of approach to gardening, isn't it?
Yeah, right. We really discourage the use of rototillers or even shovels turning over the soil because, you know, in recent years, there's just been a lot of data about soil health and what we call the soil biotic profile in your yard. That means that there are insects and microbes and fungi that live in the surface layer of your soil and then down an inch and then all the way down to feet down into the soil. It's a different array of animals, bacteria, fungi, microorganisms. And when you turn that soil over, you disrupt that biome. It's actually, it's referred to as the soil biome, mm-hmm. which we didn't used to think of the soil in that way.
But it's like the gut biome in humans.
That's right. It's like, you know, it's like any living biome. There are layers there. And when you disturb it, you know, it's like cutting down the trees in the forest. You've disturbed that biome in that spot. So tilling really disrupts the soil health. And what we want to do is keep those layers in place and maybe open the soil up a little bit with a broad fork, or eventually, if your soil is healthy enough, I can go out in my garden and the soil is so soft and fluffy because I keep it mulched mm-hmm. or I keep plants growing in it all the time. I just pull the weeds out and I pull the soil back and open up a space for a plant that I'm going to tuck in there.
Oh, replace a weed with something that you want?
Right. So, well, yeah, if I want to put a tomato in a certain spot, first I remove the weeds that are growing there and then I, you know, open up the soil a little bit, tuck the tomato in and then replace. And usually what I do is mulch around the transplant if it's big enough. I wait until the transplants are about, 6 inches or 8 to 12 inches high before I mulch around them. But that way I've preserved the soil and I've protected the plant. And there's not going to be anything else coming up around it because I've mulched. But that having that mulch in place, then the soil organisms are breaking that down constantly. And as they do that, they poop and they excrete. And that is the fertilizer mm-hmm. that my garden needs, right? I don't do a lot of fertilizing in my garden. Healthy soil shouldn't need it.
Huh. So what's your favorite mulch source then? What's in your mulch?
I use straw, so rice grass straw or wheat straw. I use alfalfa. I like that. I use leaves if I have them. Leaves are nice because they're kind of nitrogen neutral. As they break down, they're not stealing nitrogen from the soil. If I'm using something like straw because it's got a high carbon content, I might be putting some liquid fertilizer around the plants because the straw is robbing nitrogen from the soil as it breaks down. So it depends on what you use. Alfalfa is nitrogen positive. Mm-hmm. So if you have a good source of cheap alfalfa, that's the best mulch you can get, but it tends to be very expensive. So not many people can afford to use that.
is Garden for Life on the Jefferson Exchange for the month of August. I'm Jeffrey Riley with Master Gardener Lynn Kunstman. So let's come back to the issue of the stuff that's harvesting now in the month of August, because I do notice a note in the August and the food garden checklist you provide to me about you want to fertilize and prune vegetables while they're in heavy production. Let's talk about that.
If you've got some vegetables that are really cranking stuff out, you might want to use a liquid fertilizer to give them a little boost while they're in heavy production. And the pruning actually is to, for tomatoes, it's to bring them back into a reasonable space, because some of the tomatoes will go and they'll flop over out of their cages. And but also some people want to stop the tomatoes from setting new fruit as you approach the end of August. Mm-hmm. You know, they're kind of, it's like, okay, we don't need any more tomatoes. We want you to ripen the fruit that you've got. So it's okay to prune tomatoes to bring them back into a reasonable area.
If won't hurt the
getting
plant
out of hand. And yeah, you can just plant, you know, and then take some of the blossoms off so that it's not going to spend its energy making new fruit that you think might not ripen. But pruning tomatoes is fine to kind of contain them in the cage you've set up for them. That's fine.
Yeah, I know mine did go wild last year. And so.
Yeah, I know. They get, yeah. Yeah. And then they break, you know, they fall, they flop over and their branches break. So it's okay to prune those off and mm-hmm. let them do their thing inside the cage.
So I know last month we talked about when the garlic and the onions and the shallots are coming due, you want to actually stop watering them when they start browning. Is there any other plant in the garden, any like fruit bearing plant that you wanted to do the same sort of thing with as they get close to the end of the growing season?
Not that I can think of, you know, but the one thing about August is that it's really the time for people to sow the seeds that they're going to transplant in 6 to 8 weeks. People don't think, oh, in August I need to start something. But if you want a fall crop of vegetables, mm-hmm. you need to start broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, Chinese cabbage, bok choy, all the things that are going to be your fall and winter vegetables. Right. Mm-hmm. So I like to encourage people to garden year round. And so and oftentimes we don't think of August as a time to start things.
Right.
But there are lots of things that can be direct seeded. If you're pulling out garlic, you know, if you're pulling out your potatoes, you can put arugula and beets and corn salad and endive and kale and mustard greens and peas. In those places, you can direct seed those into the garden soil where those crops have come out. So once again, keeping things growing in the garden beds all the time, it makes it healthier for your soil, makes it healthier for your garden.
Anything to letting something lay fallow for a while? Is there any advantage to that? Or
sure. I mean, one of the things that's really nice to do if you have the space is to rotate your beds so that, you know, you have one bed that maybe you're growing a cover crop in it over the winter. And so planting a cover crop in the fall, late August, or, you know, putting buckwheat out. Buckwheat is fast growing. You can plant it in August. It'll come up and then you chop it down and put another cover crop over it for a fall cover crop later in September. So, yeah, you can do that. Mm-hmm. You can. This phacelia that I grow is an annual phacelia. I use it as a cover crop all over my yard. I just throw the seeds out and let it come up and grow, and then I chop it down.
Scorpion weed.
Leave it on the yeah, mm-hmm. scorpion weed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll pick it up again and as we get into September, and we're past most of the harvest for a lot of stuff, but plenty more things to come in the garden this year. Lynn
right.
Kunstman joins us in the beginning of the month for another edition of Garden for Life. She's with Jackson County Bachelor Gardeners. Lynn, talk to you next time.
All right, thanks a lot.